The police show up the next morning. Merlin tries to deflect, but it's no use. Arthur opens his mouth and admits everything. Merlin cries when they handcuff him to the bed. Arthur shushes him, says it's okay, says he needs to pay for what he's done, says this is the only way to make it right. Merlin doesn't agree. He goes to Kara the very next day and begs her to represent Arthur at the trial. She's naturally resistant, but he works and works on her. She eventually agrees, but warns Merlin that she'll be merciless, that Arthur may not thank her for it. She proves correct. Kara's defense is based on Arthur being a victim of abuse, a vulnerable young man who Uther blackmailed and manipulated into doing his will. She tells the court about Alvar, about Sophia, has Gilly testify about the way Uther treated his son. Arthur hates it. Merlin wonders if he might genuinely prefer going to jail than having his private life put on display like this. But Merlin's selfish, and he wants to be with Arthur, whatever the cost. He can't be separated from him now. It's worth it in the end. Arthur weeps in relief when the judge gives him a 2-year suspended sentence. He was less scared about going to jail than he was about leaving Merlin behind. He can't imagine a life without Merlin in it anymore. Uther and Eredian get sentenced to life in prison. Val and Senrad get 12 years each. Most of the senior leadership of Arkstone are implicated in some way, and the company shuts down within a week. Merlin's glad. Arthur doesn't know how he feels. He doesn't want to see his father yet, but he thinks he'll visit one day, when he's ready. There are still things that need to be said. For now, he concentrates on helping the police dismantle Arkstone. He starts a file on every magical unfairly defamed by the company. His mother's midwife and Sophia's father are at the top of the list. Arthur hopes to get justice for them all. Merlin uses his newfound fame to call for a public inquiry into his father's death. The Irish police agree to reopen the case and, 7 years on, Bellinor Emrys' death is recorded as unlawful. An apology is made and Huneth is awarded a token amount of compensation, which she gives straight to charity. She's happier after that, Merlin notices, as if a weight has been lifted from her. He feels the same way. The microchip vote goes ahead as though nothing had happened. It passes with a comfortable majority and people take to the streets to celebrate. Arthur is almost amused by how spectacularly his father's plan backfired. When the horror of Arkstone's scheme had come to light, the country had been up in arms. The news sparked a kind of revolution in attitudes that magicals had been building towards for years. Even Think Britain had begrudgingly condemned Uther's actions, and Prime Minister Ennis confidently promised more reforms in discrimination law to come. Merlin's right at the center of it for a short while. He understands that his kidnapping has become a cause celebre, and he's thankful for that, but he doesn't want the limelight. He gives a couple of interviews and then retreats, letting Mordred or Morgause handle the rest of the media. And he starts using magic to make himself as inconspicuous as possible. That night in Arkstone had shown him that his magic was more powerful than he ever expected, and he feels more confident in pushing at his limits nowadays. He even masters a tricky little spell that makes it harder for strangers to recognize his face. It's only a small adjustment, but it makes getting around the city a bit easier. Arthur quietly moves into Merlin's flat after the trial ends. They manage to keep the details of their relationship from the press, but they know it's only a matter of time. They both begin to talk about moving away, living somewhere else for a while, having time to just themselves. But there are people they're happy to see. When they need to escape the city, they visit Huneth in Brighton, and she helps them unwind. It's hard at first with her and Arthur. She can't quite forgive him for the kidnapping, and she's naturally suspicious about their relationship. But they win her over in the end. She knows a lost boy when she sees one, and she also knows what makes her son happy. People didn't approve of her and Balinor's relationship either, once upon a time. People aren't always right. I and Gwen and Elena all fly over to see Merlin when he's up to having visitors. Gwen spends a lot of time sizing Arthur up, but he plays nice when Merlin asks him to. Elena is her usual irrepressible self. She drags him on 3 pub crawls, almost falls in the River Thames, and gets them all banned for life from the Tower of London. I is an oasis of calm compared to the other two. Merlin can't resist asking her what she thinks of Arthur, and she nods in that composed way of hers. You'll stay with him, for good, I think. And Merlin doesn't need the sight to know that's probably true. He goes back to work at the Institute. Arthur gets a temporary job at a library. He likes the peace and quiet there. He starts taking Spanish classes in the evening, attempting to pick up where he left off. Merlin tries to learn along with him. His accent is hilarious, and the lessons descend into hysterical laughter more often than not. But he perseveres. Arthur tracks down Elian from university, who's now working as a translator in London. They meet for a pint once a week, and Arthur is thrilled by the normality of it all. It feels like he's picking up the pieces of the life that was interrupted all those years ago, like he's building a different future. So they like being social, but most of all, they like it when they're alone, when they shut the door to the flat and the whole world disappears, when Merlin curls up against Arthur on the sofa, head fitting against the curve of Arthur's neck, and Arthur reads aloud to him, hand idly stroking through Merlin's hair. When they breathe as one, when there's only love between them.